I think its military is pretty much a defense of the homeland, defense of Europe kind of military. If you look, Terry, at the base, the reason there's an EU in the first place, it's pretty noble. It started after World War II. They had had three wars going back to the Franco-Prussian War in about 70 years that killed about 100 million Europeans. And they said, "My God, we're going to keep doing this. There's going to be another war on the continent unless we change." And the whole mindset in Europe that's driving the European Union is the sense that we've got to work together. We're going to be multinational. We're going to cede sovereignty to a central governing unit that we all share, and therefore we're not going to fight each other. The whole mindset of the continent is moving away from military solutions, not only at home, but around the world. That's why they didn't want to go to war in Iraq. And therefore, if you're in that mindset, military is kind of a costly anachronism. Why pour money into it? They'd much rather pour money into their free health care or their free college education or the money they pay young mothers to stay home with the children. They'd much prefer to spend the money on the welfare state, and fortunately for them, there's a sugar daddy in the world that's willing to defend them militarily. That's the United States. As long as we keep doing this, they don't need a big military, and they can afford to pour that money into the welfare state instead.
Now, how has funding anti-terrorism tactics affected Europe's sense of its own security and its military needs?
Europe's very scared about terrorism. I'd say, were more. They had terrorism, domestic terrorism before 9/11, 2001, and they were terrified by what happened to our country, and they've been worried about it. If you look at the response, the Europeans are the only place. European countries, the only place where members of Al-Qaeda have been convicted and sent to jail. They've been quite serious about it, and they are spending money and police work on it, but. I don't think they, and they did take a pretty big part in Afghanistan. I have to say, half the casualties and half the cost in Afghanistan has been borne by the Europeans because they saw that as a threat to themselves. But basically, the notion that you're going to go around the world sending troops in to fight terrorism wherever it may be is not a European notion. They're going to fight it at home. They're going to try to do it through police work and through better security at home. And they just don't accept the military solution to this problem because I think the mindset in Europe, as I said, is not to look for military solutions to global problems.
T.R. Reid is the author of the new book, The United States of Europe. He's worked as the Washington Post bureau chief in London and Tokyo and is now the paper's Rocky Mountain bureau chief. He'll be back in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with T.R. Reid, author of a new book about the European Union and its impact on the U.S. It's called The United States of Europe, The New Superpower and the End of American Supremacy. Reid chronicled the rise of the EU while he served as the Washington Post London bureau chief. He's now the Post's Rocky Mountain bureau chief and a commentator on NPR's Morning Edition. When we left off, we were talking about why European countries' investment in the military is relatively small compared to the U.S. Since the European Union is not spending that much money on the military, and they are spending it on certain social and economic needs, their model of what the government is supposed to be doing for its people is becoming, I think, pretty different from the American model. Because in America, we're at a time of cutbacks in social services and increasing amount of money toward military, such as the war in Iraq. Could you compare the two different philosophies now about, the social services versus military?
Yeah. I think the key way to wrap this up is the term welfare state. In the United States, welfare state is kind of an epithet. It's a nasty phrase that that politicians throw at some other politician who's trying to waste money on the poor. In all over Europe, welfare state is a term of pride. They love their welfare state, and they constantly say that their welfare state, this rich pension system, free medical system, free college tuition, the payments they make to mothers to stay home with their babies. You know, if you have a baby in Norway, the government hires you at your old salary, whatever you were earning on the job, to stay home and raise your baby for a year, and they pay you the same pay, and then they guarantee your job back when you want to go back to work. That kind of thing is what they call the welfare state, and they're very proud of it. I remember I went to a demonstration at Oxford University when Tony Blair had this shocking notion. Are you ready for this? He had this idea that people should pay for college education. You know, you can get a degree at Oxford now. He's actually raised the price of a degree at Oxford to about $5,000 a year. You'd pay $40 at Harvard. This is pretty much of a bargain. But I went to a demo there, and the kids were all screaming and ranting and raving, you know, bed sheets flying from the windows. And the student said, education must be free. Free education is a crucial part of our beloved welfare state. And I wrote in the Washington Post, I think that phrase, our beloved welfare state, really captures it. They believe that government should be there to make things comfortable for you. And to me, that's a fundamental difference in worldview between our country and theirs. Of course, as I say, it's easier for them because they're not paying all this money for this huge military, and therefore they have the money left over to let kids go to college for free.
And they also have a different taxing system. Talk about the value-added tax that you paid when you were based in London.
Yeah, I was so stunned by that. I don't know. I'm sure many of your listeners have been to London. If you've been to London or lived in Britain, it's everything is outrageously expensive, two or three times what you would pay here. And then on top of this huge price, they throw a 17.5% sales tax on everything. 17.5%, you know, that's way over double what I'm paying here in Colorado. I thought it was outrageous. And my wife and I kept saying, why do they put up with this? Why do they stand for this? And then I'll tell you what happened. About a week after we arrived in London, one of my daughters woke up and her ear was about the size of a golf ball, bright red, just full of pain. We had no idea what to do. We'd been there 5 days. We had no doctor or anything. We jumped out and got in a cab. The guy took us to an emergency room. Kind of a grody old hospital, you know, the paint was chipping and everything, but the emergency room was fine. The nurse took us in. A few minutes later, a doctor saw my daughter. He gave her a lecture about cleaning her pierced earrings, you know, got the pus out of there. She felt great. Everybody was happy. I pulled out my checkbook to pay the bill. It's an emergency ward, right? They cost money. And the nurse says, you may put away your checks. We don't pay for medical care in this country. And my wife turned to me and said, there's why we're paying the 17.5%.
Why is the main taxing system this value-added tax, this 17.5% sales tax in England and a similar tax in most of the other European countries? Why the emphasis on that as opposed to income tax, estate tax, property taxes?
Yeah, they do have all that range of progressive taxes that we do, income, property taxes, corporate taxes. And they do, frankly, soak the rich. Particularly the estate tax rates in Europe are pretty high. But for the universally available services, like the payment to new parents, or the pensions, or the unemployment rates, and particularly health care, everybody gets those. There's nobody in any European country who's not covered. They're all covered. And they think everybody should pay for them. And that's why they have these high sales tax rates, because everybody pays sales taxes. There's a notion of equity there. Everybody's going to benefit from our healthcare system, so everybody ought to pay for it. Even if you don't have enough income to pay tax, pay for it when you buy things. That's the mindset.
Tia Reid is my guest. He's the Washington Post Rocky Mountain bureau chief, the former London bureau chief, and while he was based in London, he followed the rise of the European Union, and that's the subject of his new book, The United States of Europe, The New Superpower and the End of American Supremacy. I'm interested in religion in the new Europe. In the United States, the evangelical vote has become so important. You know, religion was such a big issue, particularly in the Bush campaign. And, you know, faith-based initiatives, there's so much in the United States that seems to be revolving in one way or another around faith. Is there any similar phenomenon in Europe?
No, the opposite. I gave a lot of attention to this in my book because it's so striking. If you look at Europe, it's the home of just about every major Christian denomination. It's a key center of Jewish life and culture, huge Muslim population, and yet Europeans, and particularly Generation E, the younger people I mentioned, have basically put religion out of their life. I went to a beautiful church in Stockholm beautiful church, seated, beautiful old cathedral, fantastic organ, 900 seats, and there were maybe 8 or 9 people in there for Sunday Mass. And I said to the priest, what's going on? And he said, yeah, 9, 10, that's about what we get. He said, people have so much forgotten what going to church means that they call him up and say, hey, Father, what day is Mass? And he says, Sunday morning. And they say, do I need a reservation? I mean, they just don't know. In Holland, the Church of Holland is selling its old churches for apartment buildings. Religion is just not an important part of European life. And if you're sitting with a bunch of particularly college-educated Europeans watching an American president on TV, you know, the American president, no matter who he is, always says, God bless America at the end. And they all kind of titter. They give this kind of superior laugh. Oh, my God, they're so backwards in that country kind of thing, you know.
In the United States, religion is often tied to certain moral arguments, for instance, against abortion, against homosexuality, against gay marriage. So is there a counterpart in Europe?